Welcome back to Footsteps in the Attic. It is Christmas in July today, and you're going to realize why I said that very statement in just a second. I want to send a very special shout out to our sponsor today. It is Enter the Realm in Springfield, Pennsylvania. If you need any models or miniatures painted, this guy is an amazing artist, oh so talented. Reach out to Chris at 484-472-6807. Now, today I am so honored because I have, well, what some would consider a Christmas icon. I know I certainly do. She has appeared in such classic films as Rio Grande, Blue Skies, The Bishop's Wife, and of course, the greatest movie of all time, in my humble opinion, It's a Wonderful Life, where she uttered this line to Jimmy Stewart.
Daddy, every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
Ladies and gentlemen, the beautiful Carolyn Grimes, thank you and welcome back to the show. How are you doing in Weed, California, Carolyn?
Well, I'm hot, but I'm doing okay.
I'm sure you are. It's a little sticky in the summer months, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We're in the high desert, and it's just a little, you know, my chest is just up the hill, which is a 14,000-foot mountain, but it's still hot. So it's a weird, weird thing.
Not feeling very Christmassy, is it, right now?
I always feel Christmassy.
All right. Oh, that's the perfect answer right there.
I do. You know, I have air conditioning, so it doesn't bother me any.
And you have your amazing Christmas collection in your house. So how can you not feel that magic, right?
Exactly true.
Carolyn, every time I announce you're coming on, I just like the inbox explodes. I have so many questions and I apologize if some of them you've answered before, but these fans love you and they just want their questions answered. So we will dive right in if that's okay with you.
I want to tell you one thing.
Yeah.
You're in Pennsylvania, right?
Yep. Sure am.
Well, I'm coming to Harrisburg.
No way. When is this?
I'm coming there for a gift show at the expo or something like that. And I will be coming in like on the 30th. And the show, I'm thinking the show runs for a long time. It starts, I think, like on the 6th through the 10th. It's a really long show, and it's right downtown Harrisburg. It's right across the river. Oh, it's going to be a great show. It's going to have Christmas everywhere.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to get there, and we're going to have to meet up. That would be phenomenal. I will definitely find my way to that show. I'm so glad you mentioned that. And to anybody in this area, keep that in mind. And you said that's the end of this month?
It's in December. I mean, the first week in December.
Oh, great. Okay, December. Yeah. All right, perfect. Yeah. Oh, there's plenty of time then. That's good. December 30th. Mark it down, everybody.
It's a lot of fun, and it's a huge show. So they've invited me to join them, and I'm just tickle pink.
Well, I will definitely be there. That is amazing. I'm so glad you mentioned that.
I've never been to Harrisonburg before, so it's going to be a really great experience.
Well, Pennsylvania will roll out the red carpet for you. I will make sure that happens. Otherwise, I'm going to have to make a few phone calls. Carolyn, everybody loves you. My dear friend, Tiffany, I think I mentioned this to you in the last episode in Minnesota. We talk almost every other day about something It's a Wonderful Life oriented. And I know Tiffany would want me to tell you how much she loves you and how much of an impact It's a Wonderful Life has had on her life. And she actually had a question for you. I know you were obviously an accomplished actress, and I was just curious on her behalf where you first heard of the It's a Wonderful Life audition. And even though it wasn't a hit at that time, were you recognized by the people who did go to see it?
Number one, back in the day, we had agents that represented us. So there was one agent that had most of the child stars in Hollywood. Her name was Lola Moore. So whenever the studio needed a little child actor, they would get a hold of her and tell them what they needed, you know, blonde hair, blue eye, whatever. And so she would send people from her stable out there to try out for the part. And that's what happened with me. She sent me for an interview, and there were like five or six other girls in the office. And then I walked in there, and Frank Capra was in there. He did all of his own casting, one-on-one. Even the extras, he cast them. He was a perfectionist, and he watched every single thing that went on so that he could get it just right. And I went in there, and I actually had kind of an interesting experience because one of the mothers accidentally spilled coffee on my dress. And so I went in there, and my dress was soiled, but you know what? It gave me something to talk about, and I remember, you know, it didn't bother me a bit. It was super great. And when I came out, you know, I didn't realize it, but when we were leaving, my mother was talking to one of the other mothers, and I heard them discussing the fact that they thought maybe the mother had spilled it on me on purpose.
Wow.
So that I'd be rattled to go in and talk to the casting people. But that's how it all came about. And then,
wow.
Of course, the agent gets a call, and then she calls you and she says, you got the part. And every time I got a part, she would buy me a gift and I'd get a little present.
Oh, I love that.
It was kind of neat. I mean, you know, she was responsible for all the parts I got, and great lady.
Did you get recognized for at just various times? You know, like, did people give you like a second look? No?
No. Are you kidding? There were hundreds of us kids. And really, you know, It's Once a Life wasn't even a hit back then.
Right.
So, people did. And those weren't major parts for us kids either. They were very minor. So, you know, we weren't recognized at all.
Well, Tiffany Winilko in Minnesota, my buddy, that is that answer right there. So that's crazy. Wow. It still blows my mind to think of It's a Wonderful Life not being a hit because it's so cherished now.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, I don't think that the times were ready for that film.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was what it was. It was right after the war. And people were in the mood to be entertained and to laugh. And really, It's a Wonderful Life is kind of a dark movie. So, you know, it's about a man who's going to commit suicide. And I just don't – and it was also marketed like a romantic comedy and like it would be a lot of laughs. So
right.
They go in there and they sit in the theater and they see this
– kind of heavy film.
Down, heavy,
yeah.
And I think they just didn't accept it at that time. And the movie that won the Oscar that year was The Best Years of Our Lives, which is a movie about soldiers coming back and adjusting to civilian life.
So true.
That's where the mindset was. And, you know, it is what it is. And plus, the studio came to Frank Capra and said, you've got to get your movie ready because Sinbad the Sailor was supposed to be the Christmas movie, but it's not going to be ready. So you get your movie edited, get it out there.
Wow.
And so he went to work really fast, and it wasn't released until December the 20th, which is way late for Christmas.
Yeah,
movie.
Right.
Yeah, that's when it was released at the Globe Theater in New York. That was its first showing. And so, you know, wrong timing, so many wrong things. But in the end, I think it was the best thing that could ever happen to it.
Yeah, I think in the end it turned out A-okay, I'd say.
I would, too. And I'm thankful that Frank Capra was still alive to see how wonderful that he'd made this film for the people. I'm so glad he lived long enough to see that.
And again, I will always say it, the perfect movie in my book. The perfect movie exists, and it's a Wonderful Life.
I agree.
See, there we go. I think you'll like this one. Jessa in Pennsylvania asks, what was your least favorite film to work on?
Lust for Gold.
And why is that?
Well, it was a Western movie, and
You had done a lot of westerns.
well, quite a few,
Yeah.
but this one was with Glenn Ford, and it was about was it Flying Dutchman? I don't know. Looking for the mine, the fly. Anyway,
Yeah.
he played a really mean, horrible character, and he had his job was to terrorize me, and one of the things he did was to teach me how to shoot a gun in the film. I mean, he was just really
Oh,
mean.
geez.
Yeah, he scared me to death, and I was uncomfortable. And they said, "Okay, we want you to cry, so we're going to blow onion,
Oh my God.
yeah, onion. It's just kind of a salt. They were going to blow powder, onion powder, in your eyes to make you cry." So I just went home that night, and I was scared to death. That was going to hurt.
Sure.
Yeah. So anyway, I go the next day, and they blow onion dust in my eyes. Doesn't hurt at all, and my eyes tear up. I shoot the gun, scares me, and all that sort of thing. And they cut all those scenes out of the film when it went when it was released.
Oh my gosh.
So that was kind of bad, but I mean, some of them, I did get scared with a gun, and he shot me, told me, sh showed me how to shoot it, but the crying part didn't happen in the movie. They cut it. So anyway, that was one I didn't really like too much. Plus, in California, where they shoot these films, it's always really, 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 really hot,
Right,
and
right.
all kinds of nasty critters come out in that heat.
Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, up in those mountains and all those boulders and everything, let me tell you, there were all kinds of nasty things there. And so I had to be very careful where I walked and all that kind of stuff. See, I was just kidding, I don't like that kind of thing as a little girl. And I've been scared of snakes ever
Oh,
since.
I don't blame you. I don't like them now.
Oh gosh, I just, it's a terrible phobia, and that was after the movie Albuquerque, up in the mountains where they were shooting. It was a Western with Randolph Scott and Gabby Hayes, and wow, I tell you, I've not gotten over that one yet.
Oh, I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. Not at all. My mom, you can't even draw a snake around her. Hers is that bad. She cannot stand snakes. So believe me, you're in good company.
No, I just can't stand it. And I've tried to desensitize myself, but nothing has worked. And I
No,
don't
well,
think anything ever will. It just gets worse every year.
yeah, they're slither and they're creepy. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Hey, look, we have a question from Seneca Falls. April in Seneca Falls asks, do companies like Hallmark contact you before they make It's a Wonderful Life merchandise, or do you always find out like after the fact? Because you're a Christmas ornament. There's so many products with your likeness. Do you get a heads up on that?
Actually, no.
Wow.
I was very disappointed when I saw Hallmark come out with that in
Yeah.
the 90s. It was, at the time, I wasn't involved in It's a Wonderful Life. I was still raising my family, but I think
Sure.
I could have probably had some legal advice and got some kind of, satisfaction that they shouldn't use my likeness without my permission.
I agree. I'm
Yeah.
so surprised. I would hope a company like Funko, if they would come out with an It's a Wonderful Life, would contact you. And by the way, Funko, you should do something like that. So get in touch with Carolyn, make
Oh, it's
that
not me. Now,
happen.
it's Paramount. They own the rights. So anybody that does anything with It's a Wonderful Life has to contact Paramount. And I'm going to say that there's not a whole lot of merchandise out there because I don't think Paramount really goes for that.
Yeah,
So
I think you're right.
they do the DVD, but that's pretty much about it. You don't see it around like you do Christmas Story and other movies that have Christmas involved.
Well, that's why we need zuzu.net, because there's a lot of great merchandise out there. So anyone listening, zuzu.net, go. You will not be disappointed.
No, they've never said anything to me. In fact, mm-hmm. Paramount's been very, very kind to me. So I'm really glad that they haven't ever, pulled rank and said, you can't do this. So I'm very fortunate that they haven't done that.
They better not, because a mob of us Christmas lovers will hound Paramount if they ever get on you, Carolyn.
Well, I hope the person from Seneca Falls is ready for the festival, because we're going to have another big one.
I know, right? And that starts, of course, in the Christmas months. So when does that begin officially?
It's the second weekend in December.
All right. This is great. You got Seneca Falls, the beginning, and then you got Harrisburg, the end of December. I'm so excited.
Well, I am too. No, that Harrisburg is the first of the last of November, the first week in December. Then I go from Harrisonburg to Seneca Falls.
Wow. Oh, that's phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Put on my magic shoes and travel everywhere.
She really does. I've seen them. Catherine, right here in Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania, asks, what was your happiest moment on the It's a Wonderful Life set?
My happiest moment.
Because I know that's not always easy, because working as a child actor, you're not always necessarily in this blissful state. It's a lot of work. So, is there any memory you have where it's just like, it still makes you smile?
Well, actually off screen.
Yeah, there you go.
I had a lot of fun playing with my little brother, Jimmy Hawkins, in the movie. We run around and I chase him, and we had a really good time. And I really enjoyed those moments with him years ago. It was a fun thing. And, we didn't have school yet. And so it was fun to be able to do a little bit of terrorizing.
Well said. I love that, a little terrorizing.
But as far as a favorite scene, it would be the one at the end of the movie where all the people were there. It was a happy moment. And Frank Capra was a wonderful director, a kind man. He never lost his temper or yelled at us. He was just a very, very nice person, and that came across in his directing ability.
Yeah, amen. Amen to that. I think you'll like this one. Mike in Florida asks, was the famous pedal scene hot behind the scenes, because as you mentioned, temperature, and how many production assistants were on hand during that oh so intimate scene?
Well, I have no idea how many people were there, but there were a lot. There were cameras, on mm-hmm. different angles and machinery, and they ran come up to you and mop your face every once in a while. Back in the day, there was a heat wave going on. It was 90 degrees. But I don't think heat bothers little kids like it does adults. So it was a closed set, and it was really cool in there. I don't know why. Maybe because it was a big cavernous thing and dark, but well insulated. But it wasn't hot. And so I don't even remember it being hot at all. It was comfortable.
Oh, good. Okay, good. That's nice to hear, because you do hear a lot of stories about, oh my gosh, like Jimmy Stewart's running through the town with this, snow, and he's sweating like crazy because it was so hot.
Yeah, it was.
I mean,
unusually so.
Fran in New Mexico asks, if you can settle a debate which is occurring in her household, as to whether or not Zuzu saw George put the pedals in his pocket. So what is your take on that?
Well, I hope it doesn't hurt the raging battle, but mm-hmm. I believe that Zuzu saw him put the pedals in his pocket. And why Capra, he you shoot a scene maybe 10 times before, you know, then they when they edit the film, they pick the scene that they like the best.
Yeah.
And I know, I remember him shooting several times. And why he would leave the one in where I'm looking directly at his hand in that pocket.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought about it a lot. And the only thing I can think of is that the reality of life comes to note, and that he knows that I know that I love my daddy very much. And I mean, I see what he does. And so it's good enough for me as a little kid.
Oh, and what a great answer.
I think that's maybe what he was really trying to portray.
What a great answer. I'm going to take that. That's exactly how I'm going to interpret it, too. So, wow. So well said.
I've been asked that before.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. this is interesting. And I think you've shared, I remember you sharing a really funny story kind of along these lines, but I will let you either retell it or come up with a new thing that I'm not expecting. But Lance in New Jersey asks, you've worked with John Wayne, Bing Crosby, Fred Astaire, Cary Grant, Lon Chaney Jr., and Jimmy Stewart, among the many more. I mean, who was the most fun and the quirkiest to work with?
I have to say that Cary Grant was the most fun.
Yes. I remember he loved your relationship with him.
Yes. He would take me around and practice his ice skating, pulling me on a sled on the, because there really was a rink on the stage. And I just loved him. He would tell me stories, and that was really good. I really enjoy it. But you know what? Lon Chaney was a cool dude.
Your story, I was hoping you'd bring that up. Tell that Lon Chaney story, because I thought that was hilarious.
You know, I remember him as the Wolf Man.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was kind of a scary person. And in this movie, he's a real grouch and down in the mouth and horrible person. He's the chief bandit. He's really a bad guy. And so, you know, he would absolutely, he made friends with me. He actually would talk to me, and, you know, he didn't hang around with other people very much, but he kind of hung around with me because I don't know why, he just did. And he would talk to me and tell me, you know, because I love listening about his experiences as a Wolfman. And so, anyway, there was a scene that he was going to be in a fight with Randolph Scott. And so one of the things that he had always said was that he thought I was very ugly.
And I just can't
that
believe.
Was how he started our friendship. And I said, "What? Why?" And he said, "Well, because you have freckles."
Oh,
and
my so God.
I thought freckles were the ugliest things in the world. I hated them. And so immediately I like him because he's honest about stuff, you know? So anyway, we became friends. And he told me, he said, "Now we're going to have a fight scene here." And he said, "I'm going to show you what's going to happen." He said, "I'm going to bleed." And so he shows me this capsule. And he says, "I'm going to put this in my mouth." And he said, "At some point, I'm going to hit my cheek and it's going to bust and run out my mouth, but I'm not hurt. I'm just doing this for the scene." So it was a big deal that everybody wanted to watch the fight scene between him and Randolph Scott. And so my mother and I stood around and watched, and sure enough, you know, they had the fight. Randolph Scott's never got rumpled. His shirt never even came out of his pants, nothing. He was just beautiful, you know, and of course, Lon Chaney Jr. has got a cigarette hanging out of his mouth the whole time he's fighting. He never loses the cigarette. So there's blood pouring out of his mouth. But I mean, it was in retrospect, looking at it today, it's hilarious. It's just hilarious.
Right.
But, watching it happen, I appreciated the fact that he told me that he wasn't really going to be hurt. So I'll never forget that. It was kind of cool.
He sounded like a really fun and interesting guy. He really did.
I don't know if he was fun, but
Maybe. Yeah, definitely quirky though, as per the question. Definitely
he was
quirky.
quirky. He was definitely quirky,
But
and I
f
enjoyed my time with him.
for the record though, you were an adorable child, so I want that out there. Kristen in Broomall, Pennsylvania asks, how did you study your lines as a child? Like, how did your process work? Like, in any part?
Well, I couldn't read yet, with the earlier films. So my mother would work with me the night before. And
Wow.
I guess I was smart enough and I remembered. So,
Wow. The night
we just
before?
practiced. Yeah, we memorized the lines for the next day.
That's
And what was really
incredible.
bad is sometimes they'd change the whole scene and change the lines, and then I'd
Right.
have to memorize them real quick on set. But I really
Wow.
never had much trouble with that. So,
That's
I mean,
incredible.
children's brains are just fresh and new, and they pick up things right away. Now, if I'd been an adult, I probably would have, had to suffer a little bit, struggle, shall we say. But that's why so many times when I made a film, the big stars would be sitting in their chairs with a script, and they'd be
Right.
studying the script before each scene. Because it's a lot of work to memorize all that stuff.
And you were around there playing because you're like, well, I got my lines. I'm good.
That's right. That's right.
We're going international with this question, Carolyn. Ingrid in Norway asks what your favorite country to visit is.
I think that my favorite country would probably be England, and second very high on the list would be Norway.
Wow, look at that. Okay, see, Ingrid, look, I didn't plan that. That was amazing. So, Norway was number two on the
My
list.
favorite cities in Norway. I love Bergen, but I love all of England. I love
Me too.
the whole history all over. I love the beauty of the country. I just love England. I
Me
always
too.
have. And
Me
I've been
too.
all over the world. I've been to Thailand and South America, just about everywhere, Australia. But that's my favorite country.
I agree. I love England too, and I love their sense of humor. I feel like I'm on the same page as the English humor. It's very dry, but also absurd. Like they embrace a lot, and I love
I just don't like their food very well.
that. Fair. That's very fair. The chocolate's very
Yeah,
good.
well, I'm not much for Cadbury.
Oh, well, there we go. See, you know what I love about you, Carolyn? You don't give fake answers. You give very real answers. That's why I love having you on.
They do have a lot of good things, but the food, I don't know. I have a
It's
hard time with that.
not your deal.
Not really, no.
We have another international question here. Joss in Australia asks, what is the best Christmas gift you ever received was?
When I was 6 years old, and it was after I had done It's a Wonderful Life, I lived in a three-room house. My mother and father didn't have any money. My father was a clerk in a grocery store, and so we were very tight, pinched for money, and we didn't have anything. So my Christmas tree would always be on a table. It would be about, what, 3 feet tall, maybe 2 feet tall, and it would sit on top of a table. So that particular year, I guess I had a good year and made a little bit of money because I got a bicycle.
Oh, that's a big
That
one.
was the coolest thing ever.
Oh,
I loved it. I woke up Christmas morning and there was that bicycle right under the table where the Christmas tree was, and I just thought that was the greatest thing ever.
that is what a perfect answer. I bet you can still picture it perfectly in your mind, can't you?
Oh yeah, I can. Oh, yeah.
Did it have a bow on it, too?
No, it didn't have a bell. It had
But,
training wheels, though.
oh, there we go. Chase in Honolulu asks, is there anything about It's a Wonderful Life you would change, whether it's an added scene or a storyline adjustment? That's a tough one. I would say personally, no. For me, it's a perfect movie, but you might have a different perspective being there behind the scenes.
Not really. I've watched that movie probably 10,000 times, and that's an exaggeration, but I've dissected it inside and out, and I think Frank Capra was an absolute genius, and he had
I do too.
everything right. Everything right.
I do too.
So I don't think I'd change any of it at all. None of it.
Love that answer, and I couldn't agree with you more. Steven Burbank asks if all of your scenes were on the same lot.
Yes, they were all on stage 14 at the, oh gosh, RKO
Look at that.
Studios.
Wow. Good
Yeah.
recall.
Well, it's a big deal because I've been back there since, because it's, kind of a famous set because of that. And that was where it was all shot for me. But then there was a on-location studio lot. And they did all the outside scenes, and Capra had built like 80 building fronts on the street to make it, the town of Bedford Falls. And so that was out in the studio ranch. And so I never went out there because I was never in a scene outside. I was always inside, so I never saw it. But I knew it was there, and that's where a lot of the shooting took place.
I'm always impressed by your attention to detail. If I had 1/10 of your memory, I'd be in good shape.
I'm 83 years old. It's going, let me
No,
tell you.
nobody, let me tell you something. Nobody listening to this show is going to believe you. So 83, no way. There's no way. You're more active than people half your age.
Well, I think that I've been given a mission. I just like to kind of to pursue it, and I like to meet people. I love people, so this all works out to my benefit because I get to see and meet a lot of people and hear their
Well,
stories. And my gosh, I'm such a lucky person.
can I speak for the people for a minute? We love you back, so thank you for being that way. True story. Jen in Idaho asks, okay, here we go. If Cousin Eddie should have kidnapped Mr. Potter and put him in the RV so George could tell him off, I think he kind of did tell Mr. Potter off anyway, but it's kind of bleeding Christmas Vacation together with It's a Wonderful Life. I was like, okay, that's a wacky one, but I knew you'd appreciate it loving Christmas Vacation as well.
I do. I love Christmas Vacation and I love Eddie, but
The
I
good
don't
old.
think I can compare the two.
No, definitely two different, very different movies.
Yes.
Fran in New Mexico asks if let's see. Oh, if you'll ever write another cookbook.
Well, we just released the 75th anniversary of the cookbook that we wrote 50 years, the 50-year anniversary, and we added a whole lot to it, and it's really a nice one to get. There's a lot of scoop from the film in it. It's a really good one. And then I have a personal one that is just my recipes with my mother and her recipes, and that is my favorite of all because it's my personal one, and there's a story behind that too, so the reason it was written.
Wow, I love that. You just don't see, I love it. You are so active and busy and so creative that you get an idea and you see it through.
And they can look on my website at zuzu.net and see whatever, see both of the books.
Oh, you have to. I have the cookbook. It's amazing. You have all kinds of stories. I love the names that you came up with for everything has an It's a Wonderful Life spin to it, which is amazing. Perfect for Christmas parties.
Well, the 75th anniversary one also has a lot more information and interviews with a lot of the cast members that were still living at that time. And it's just got a lot of information that the first book didn't have. So it was just a remake of the book to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the film, and it's got a lot of scoop.
Yeah, it's got a lot of, you got to get it, people. You got to get it. Lorraine in Wyoming asks if you own an original copy of The Greatest Gift.
Yes, I do.
Look at that. Wow. That is something to have. For those of you who are unaware, living under a rock, that is the book that inspired the movie It's a Wonderful Life.
Yep, it was originally kind of a Christmas card, and then it was a booklet, kind of a booklet thing, and a book, very tiny. And then Frank Capra ended up buying the rights to it. Then he hired a couple of screenwriters to put their adaptations on the story. And then he took their recommendations and he went to La Quinta in California, and he had a house there in the desert. And he went in there, it was kind of like in Palm Springs. He went in that house, shut the door, and that's where he put all the different stories together and made his own.
And again, it's like a classic was born. I love this next question because I remember your answer from last time about a song I asked you about. I'm still laughing about it because I asked if you had an emotional tie to Auld Lang Syne, and what did you say?
Oh, that's the worst song I've ever heard.
I still find that hilarious because it's so associated with the movie, and you're like, no, I do not want to hear that song.
It's stupid. I don't understand it now. I didn't then, and I certainly didn't know the words. I don't think Jimmy Stewart knew the words either.
They just say
I don't.
go during that scene? Was it trying to just like go and sing along?
Well, I tried to sing the words, but of course I
Right.
didn't know what the heck I was doing. And Jimmy Stewart, he stops singing and starts laughing at me. Well, I don't think he knew the words either, and that's why he did that. So, it was a moment, and it was a sweet moment. But boy, I'll tell you that I understand his selection. I do. I know why he picked that song, but
Right.
it wasn't dear to me and never will be.
So this leads into the actual question of what is your favorite Christmas song?
Oh, I have so many,
Well, go
so.
ahead. Name some of them then. You don't have to just pick one.
Oh, I like White Christmas. I like
Great one.
Silent Night. I love Christmas carols. That's
Yeah.
probably my favorite of all. I love Silent Night, Joy to the World. And I was raised a Christian in church, and we sang all the time. And I had a, believe it or not, a really pretty voice.
Yeah,
And I sang
you
with the
still
youth
do.
choir when I was in the sixth grade. I sang with the adult choir because I had a nice voice. I won
Wow.
two scholarships to college with my voice. But I sang a lot of carols, and I just love the traditional Christmas carols. I just think they're wonderful. I really don't have a favorite, but maybe Silent Night. I loved Silent Night. That was always a
Yeah,
good one for
it's
me. And
beautiful.
White Christmas, Bing Crosby, that always flipped my bibby.
Did Was there anybody that at the time you wanted to work with that you didn't get a chance? Did you have like a list, even as a child, like, oh, I would love to work with this actor or that actress?
I wanted to work with Margaret O'Brien.
Oh.
Margaret O'Brien was the child star back then. And she was famous because she cried all the time in the movies. I
Right.
mean, you'd look at her and she'd cry, you know. But she was very talented, and I would have loved to have worked with her. I think that would have been a really nice experience. I
Yeah.
know her now, and you know, we're friends and all that. But back then, I think it would have been a wonderful thing because she was such a talented little girl. And
And so were
my
you.
mother and father would take me to the movies and look, watch her movies. And I just thought she was so wonderful because she could cry. You know, just so neat that she could do that. And she
Well,
did it in every movie.
unbelievable, like, right?
Yeah.
Lex asks, what are your favorite, and I think you've answered this before, but I'll ask again, what are your favorite non-Christmas movies?
Oh gosh.
I know it's hard when you're put on the spot. Like, what, wait, what, which ones?
Well, you know what? I have sentimental ones I like. Like, for instance, The High and the Mighty with John Wayne. I love that movie
Yeah.
because it was the last movie my dad and I saw together. So I always kind of love that movie and think it's, you know, deep in my heart. But you know, I don't really have one that I just actually, you know, love, love, love. I just have many. There's so
Yeah.
many good
Yeah.
movies out there.
You're also
And
a voracious reader, I know that. So I know you have favorite books. I know which one it is. So you want to tell people what your favorite book is?
well, you really want to know, it's The Stand.
I love that because it's so unexpected. It's such a great book, though. That's, I mean, that's such a great choice.
Well, I never liked the movie or anything else, but that book, I just, he had a hold of me and never let go till the very end. And I still think about it. I think it's a great book. I just really enjoyed that book.
And you own
And then
a special copy of that, don't you?
I do. Yeah, I do.
And I'll bet nobody's allowed to touch it. I
No, it's not out in the open.
didn't think so. You are such a delight. You always are. And every time I have you on, the time flies because you're just so near and dear to my heart. I love having you on. I hope you will come back. I just have one final question from Genesis in Ohio. She just asked, is there any quick story you can share about your interactions with Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart that stick out in your mind?
Well, I don't really have any that stick out for Jimmy Stewart, but Cary Grant, oh my gosh, he made the stories that he told me. He would read me stories and he'd tell me stories, and they'd just come alive the way he talked about it. He was so much, he loved children. He really, really did. And
I got
you
that
could tell
impression.
as a child, you could tell it was a real thing. And for him to take his time, of course, I think there was a little friction on set between the
Yeah.
adults. So I think that, you know, he spent his time with me probably for that reason, but I took it as he liked me, and I really liked him because he was so kind and gentle.
Good
I don't
sense of
know.
humor and
He was just great. You know, when there's all these big stars, they don't pay attention to little bit players. I mean, they don't, you know, that's just part of it. And man, he just did. And I always will remember that.
you know, it's funny because that makes me, I mean, I liked him before anyway. I love his work, but just hearing that from you repeatedly, and I can feel like the bond you had and what a kind man he was, that makes me think even higher of him. So I'm so glad that you share stories like that.
Well, he was one of a kind, I can tell you that. He really was. But I also liked Gabby Hayes. He was really cool, too.
Yeah, any Gabby Hayes quick little anecdote or interaction you had that you can share, or just in general?
Well, there was a there was a scene in the film where I'm riding next to Shotgun on the top of the coach. And, you know, there's like six horses on the thing.
Yeah.
And it's bumpy, 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 you know, because it was a real coach and real stuff. And Gabby Hayes thought that it was so dangerous to do that he wouldn't even do it. He had a stunt double set up there with me, you know. And he talked to the director and said, you know, this is really dangerous. They could hit a bump and boom, she'd be gone. And we weren't tied in or anything. And I was up there with Catherine Grayson. She was next to me. And I didn't think anything about it. I thought it was the coolest thing ever, of course. And so riding on that coach was really a very dangerous thing. And I will always remember how Gabby Hayes went to bat to try to get the director not to put me up there and put a double up there. But he didn't. He put me up there, and I had a lovely experience. But thank God I didn't, you know, get knocked over and the horses ran over me.
Man, I know. What a terrible, I mean, I can't believe they put you up there after, you know, he, you know, pled your case. That unbelievable, Carolyn. Well, again, you're a badass, so I'm not surprised you went up there and you're like, okay, I have this. I'm so delighted that you did this. Would you please come back around, you know, the Christmas months, not in your peak season, because I know you're busy, but can you please come back on and we will talk all things Carolyn and all your appearances?
Oh, sure. That'd be great.
Oh, I would love that. Yes.
Come see me in Harrisonburg.
Oh, I'm definitely coming. That's 100% happening. And let's plug that site one more time. That is zuzu.net. And yes, you can get signed memorabilia. You can get the cookbooks. You can get ornaments. You can find out
everything.
A little bit of everything for Christmas and beyond.
That's for sure.
Darn right. Well, I'm going to ask you to hold on really quickly because I want to thank you for doing this off the air. But for the Christmas and July episode, this is Brian Hobson for the wonderful Carolyn Grimes. We'll see you next week.